Chapter 5. The Battle of Ridge 1. Hanlon. Darkness was falling, and with it, the storm had died. Lieutenant Hanlon shifted the focus ring on the bulky Munitorum issue magnoculars she carried, zooming in on a shallow depression in the ash dunes directly ahead of her position. Something was moving out in the gathering dusk, a black mark on the featureless grey ashscape. The Numerian pressed her combeads transmission stud.
Possible contact, 12 o'clock, 1,000 yards out. Stand by.
The rest of the six-man reconnaissance team acknowledged with silent double taps of their bead mics. Hanlon shifted slightly, her body pressed against the warm, dry earth, settling her grip on the magnoculars. They'd been in position for 3 hours Terran standard, ever since relieving the last of the day's pickets, a platoon of Faeburn vanquishers. The six Numerians were flat to the earth and spaced out over 100 yards, capes draped over their bodies and doused with liberal amounts of the ash surrounding them. In the lengthening shadows and dust-hazed air, they were almost totally indistinguishable from the ground they occupied. They'd had over a dozen minor contacts already, all of them small, wiry, green-skinned slave creatures scurrying through the wasteland ahead. Sergeant Rakin, Hanlon's second, thought they were just scavengers come from the city, but Hanlon suspected their presence was more sinister. To her, their activities looked like the work of spotters or scouts. She shifted the magnoculars back over the zone where she'd spotted movement, seeking out a hard fix. Behind her, a sound like a thunderclap rang out, followed by two more. A series of distant thudding noises followed, and light flared briefly across the wasteland. She didn't look back. She knew she was hearing the sound of aircraft and the detonation of their bombs along the ridgeline to the recon unit's rear. The moment the worst of the ash storm had lifted, the dust-choked heavens had filled with crude orc planes. Hanlon had heard rumors that the Navy had abandoned Ikara's orbit to a Xenos armada, and half of the aircraft that should have been denying the Greenskins' air superiority were still in the launch bays of void warships now on the other side of the system. All of which was why Hanlon had been relieved when Colonel Ruthers had assigned the recon company to picket duty. Even if it took them closer to the alien horde that had stormed Shibat, at least they were no longer stationed on Ridge 1 while the bombs rained down. The aerial attacks were little more than a distraction down among the scrap and ash that stretched out between the ridge and the edge of Shibat's ruined slums. The Gretchen were an altogether more immediate problem. She caught sight of the thing she'd seen earlier, thanks to the magnoculars' light-amplifying filter. It was diminutive and hunched over as it scurried from one rock to the next. It also appeared to be carrying something. Hanlon was sure she caught the glimmer of a lens. She cursed softly. They were definitely scouts.
"Contact confirmed," she murmured into the combead. "Markle!"
"Target acquired," the sharpshooter responded over the link.
"Take the shot."
A crack echoed out over the ash. Hanlon saw the greenskin runt twist as it ran, a puff of blood and viscera, curiously devoid of sound at such a distance, flashing across the lieutenant's view before the thing went down. It didn't move again.
"Target eliminated," Hanlon breathed. "Good shot, Max."
"Notch another one up, Vaughn," Markle murmured in response.
Hanlon felt Vaughn, the squad's other marksman, bristle. They were both armed with Mark 7 Zestran long rifles, hard round, silenced. Both had turned the picket duty into an unofficial competition over who could pick off more of the little hook-nosed aliens.
"More ammunition expended per kill shot," Vaughn grumbled. "I could take out a dozen green runs as well if I blew through 5 magazines at a time."
Hanlon hushed Markle before he could respond to the accusation. She wanted to check in on their transport.
"Battle Wrath, this is Viper 1. Are you still in position? Over."
"Viper 1, Battle Wrath. Still holding in Sector 5. Just say the word."
The voice of Battle Wrath, the unit's Chimera armored personnel carrier, was some sort of comfort at least. If things went south, they could withdraw back to the ridgeline at speed. They'd need to, if the artillery newly sighted along the long ash rise started dropping shells. There was another thunderclap, and Hanlon's ears filled with the sudden aching roar of supersonic engines. She allowed herself to half-turn and caught a glimpse of a trio of cruciform shapes whipping through the darkening skies further east. Imperial Navy Thunderbolts climbing into an interceptor run on the greenskin bombers, speckling the dust clouds higher up. Earlier, she'd seen an Orc fighter peeling away, one engine ablaze, pluming foul black smoke as it twisted into a death dive south of the recon team's position. It had struck the ground amidst the blossoming fireball, the explosion reaching Hanlon's ears long seconds after the distant flash of light. She hadn't spotted a chute. She doubted the Greenskins fitted their aircraft with any sort of escape precautions anyway. More Imperial fighters rocketed overhead, lightnings this time, lower and faster. They were there and gone in a bang of displaced air, and it took a great deal of effort for the Numerian not to sit up to see their targets above the ridge to her back. She could hear the distant staccato thudding of Hydra anti-aircraft batteries intermingled with the deeper notes of the bombing run detonations. Despite the onset of night, it seemed like the Greenskins' aerial bombardment was only intensifying. She checked her wrist chrono. They only had 15 more minutes before sundown, and then the last of what little light was penetrating Ikara 9's dust-shrouded atmosphere would be gone. Another Greenskin aircraft ploughed into the wasteland, further north. This time it was a bomber, and the detonation when its payload went up caused a small mushroom cloud of flame and black smoke to flare into existence. Hanlon felt the earth beneath her tremor as the shockwaves from the impact travelled through the shifting, unstable ash. She caught more movement, this time a little to the south, on the edge of the sector being watched by a tribe team of Tamaran scalp takers. Another damned Greenskin spotter. She was about to call it in when she realized something was out of place. The tremors from the downed bomber hadn't dissipated. She paused, making sure she was right, then tapped the comlink.
"Anyone else still feeling that?"
"The ash is shifting," Wilk, the team's vox operator, responded.
"Subterranean activity," Vaughn said.
"Wait, listen," Krevin replied.
Hanlon paused and held her breath, straining for whatever sound the team's Pathfinder had picked up. It didn't take her long to hear it too. Beneath the distant thudding of flak guns and the base crumps of explosions, a noise like a swelling ocean was steadily rising. As it continued to increase in volume, so too did the tremors running beneath the guardsmen. She felt a shudder slip up her spine as she realized what she was hearing. The roaring of thousands of throats and the pounding of thousands of boots. It was the sound of an army of savages on the move, and it was drawing closer. She snapped her magnoculars back up and trained them directly west of the recon team's position. Darkness had shrouded the vague, jagged line that demarcated the ruins that had once been Shepard's most easterly slums, but with the viewfinder set to maximum, Hanlon could see shapes moving out beyond the city's remains. Not the lone skittish motions of one or two Gretchen, but the churning mass of a wall of bodies stampeding east, directly towards her section.
"Great Namara's golden hair," she cursed. "Wilk, get on the vox and get me the officer of the watch, now!"
Castor. The commanders of the Fulminata, those who yet lived, had gathered in the shadow of General Chevik's headquarters to assess their new position. Castor had seen Field Marshal Kloss arrive at the fortified Envirodome 2 hours earlier, coming from 5th Corps' dispositions further north. Tyrannus had already spoken with the Field Marshal, and Chevik again in private. Now, as Kloss called a general briefing of all his remaining Corps commanders, Tyrannus did the same with his brother Primaris. Besides Castor, 4 of the Brotherhood's 5 surviving sergeants were present. Only Sergeant Nerva was elsewhere, left in command of the squads holding the short stretch of the line at the heart of Ridge 1. Severus was there too, the grim skull helms of both the Reaver and Castor, ensuring those guardsmen stationed close to Chevik's tent gave the transhuman assembly a wide berth. Polixis had been offered a space at the briefing, but had elected to continue working back at the main Medicay hub, set to the ridge's rear. The others were gathered in a circle, helmets clamped to their hips, bolters locked across thighs or chests, waiting on the word of Lieutenant Tyrannus.
"There has been no word from Brother Captain Demeter," he said.
"May the Emperor guide and watch over his worthy soul,"
Castor said. Tyrannus nodded before continuing.
"That being the case, it is my duty to assume complete command of the Fulminata until such times as the captain is recovered, or his death is confirmed."
"The Codex supports your appointment," Lieutenant Samson said firmly, nodding across the circle to Tyrannus. "The captain's final orders were clear, and his sacrifice will not be in vain. Our new defensive lines here will allow us to check this fresh Xenos invasion."
"Agreed, Lieutenant," Tyrannus said. "Nonetheless, we must prepare for the worst. I am ordering the rest of the Demi-Company to maintain its cohesion from now on. We were weakened in Shabbat because we spread our strength too widely. Even if it helped us preserve the guard during the withdrawal, we were unable to land a telling blow against the Xenos. That will not be the case when they come again."
"But for how long are we expected to maintain these positions?" Sergeant Valorius asked. "High Command must be aware of the situation here. We are overextended, still disorganized and heavily outnumbered."
"There are reinforcements coming from Croton," Tyrannus said, "but it will be at least a day before they arrive, and a number more before they are fully deployed. We must be the bulwark until then."
Castor assessed Tyrannus as he briefed his sergeants. He had few doubts about the lieutenant's new command, and yet it was inevitable that it should feel strange, almost sacrilegious. Demeter was not long unaccounted for, and beneath the veneer of a standard situational briefing, Castor could sense the pain of each and every one of the Ultramarines present. All wished they had been at the captain's side when he had taken his stand.
"Do we know the strength of the reinforcements on their way?" Domitian asked.
"Von Klimt has not been forthcoming with exact figures. I suspect the numbers will not be sufficient to launch a counterattack, but they should be enough to stabilize the front. Simply put, that is our primary strategic objective. If we stop the Greenskin Warlord here, it will give Imperial forces on Ikara the time to redeploy, and if that is achieved, it in turn allows the rest of the subsector to shift its weight to this system. At worst, Ergork's new momentum will be halted. At best, he will be trapped and killed. But first, we must hold this ridge."
"What about the situation in orbit?" Sergeant Clastis asked. "Is it true the fleet has completely disengaged?"
"It is. To the best of our knowledge, the Imperial Navy are currently holding station on the system's spinward edge. The Spear of Macragg is with them. They are waiting on reinforcements before contesting orbit. That means the Xenos are in complete control of Ikara 9's anchorage for the foreseeable future. It's a reality we are simply going to have to accept for the time being. Expect them to assert their air superiority over the next few days."
"They've withdrawn for now, though,"
Domitian pointed out, glancing skywards. There had been no sign of the alien aircraft that had first fallen on them just a few hours earlier.
"They are likely refitting," Tyrannus said. "Let us pray that remains the case."
"Do we have a holding point for our own casualties now that extraction to the Spear of Macragg is impossible?"
Valorius asked.
"And are our own Thunderhawks and Overlords going to continue to operate out of the Corton airfields?"
As the others spoke, Castor watched Samson. Aside from his opening support of Tyrannus, the lieutenant hadn't spoken since the start of the briefing. His endorsement had been fit and proper. Tyrannus's seniority was unambiguous, and the character of both officers suited their new roles. Tyrannus had always modelled himself after Demeter. Now that respect could help mould him into the commander the Fulminata needed. For his own part, Samson had never progressed beyond the role of a competent second, and Castor wondered sometimes whether he ever would. He was large and stoic, and few could best him gladius to gladius in the sparring pits. He was the very image of a Praetorian of ancient Macragg, with his heavy features and short, curled blonde hair. His silence, however, betrayed the truth behind his deference. He preferred enacting the orders of others rather than issuing them,
at least on a company-wide level. Castor didn't doubt he would be an excellent second for Tyrannus, but if the first lieutenant were to become a casualty, the situation might warrant Castor's own intervention.
"Communications from the picket line to the west," Sergeant Faustus said abruptly, interrupting Tyrannus's response to his sergeant's.
The Ultramarines had unrestricted access to all the channels and frequencies being used by the Astra Militarum. Faustus automatically pinged the correct signal to the rest of the assembled Ultramarines. Castor listened as a thickly accented Numerian voice blurted over the priority communications band.
"Repeat! Greenskin incursion from the west! They're coming!"
More voices overlaid it, confirmation from the picket units all along the line pouring in. A full-scale Xenos assault was rolling from the city towards Ridge 1. Castor turned west towards Shebat. The dusk and the ash obscured his view, but he swore he could detect a tremor in the earth and a tidal roar in the air. His fist clenched unconsciously around his Crozius Arcanum's worn grip.
"The picket line is withdrawing," Faustus said. "Field Marshal Kloss is issuing a full stand too."
"Assemble with your squads, battle brothers," Tyrannus said, unclamping his helm. "This time, there will be no retreat."
Hanlon. Hanlon and her recon team ran for their lives. The pounding of their boots against the dry earth was punctuated by the whip-crack of multi-laser fire as the chimera they were racing towards sent covering fire streaking over their heads, punching pursuing greenskins off their feet and splattering the ash with dark blood. Hanlon smacked her palm against the shoulder of Sergeant Rakin, the Numerian crouching just feet from the transport's open rear hatch, blazing away at the charging Xenos with his rifle on semi-automatic. Transports from the forward observation posts had raced up, ash and dust churning from their tracks, providing a means of exfiltration. It was as Hanlon and her men had raced for their chimera that things had started to go wrong. The lead elements of the onrushing Orc wave began blazing away with their inaccurate firearms, and shells from the artillery positions embedded into Ridge 1 began hammering down just a few hundred yards from the withdrawing picket line. Great blossoms of ash and dirt, scattered with gory shreds of Xenos meat, burst across the line, the initial impacts throwing the whole recon team to the ground. It was carnage, and Hanlon's team were in the midst of it.
"Go!"
Hanlon bellowed at Rakin, her voice barely audible over the Chimera's engines and the frenzied bellowing of thousands of onrushing aliens. Rakin rose and ran alongside her, both guardsmen pounding up the Chimera's access ramp and into the tight, bare metal troop compartment.
"All in, Battle Wrath!"
Wilk was already shouting into the vehicle's intercom unit.
"Get us out of here!"
The rear hatch began to rise, even as the armored personnel carrier turned sharply east. The recon team inside flung unceremoniously against the fold-down benches to one side of the hold.
"On the Laz arrays!"
Hanlon shouted over the roar of the transport's engines, grabbing the overhead rail before she was thrown down. The rest of the squad snatched at the stocks of the lasguns built into the Chimera's hull, the troop benches acting as a low firing step as they angled them downwards and started to fire. Hanlon peered out of the armored las vision slit in the Chimera's rear. The narrow view showed only a horde of greenskins and the ash cloud kicked up from the transport's tracks. Gunfire flared in the gloom, and she heard the sharp crack of rounds ricocheting from the vehicle's ramp and rear armor. A flurry of bright lasbeams streaked back into the oncoming mob. The turret multilaser had been rotated 180 degrees. For a second, the lieutenant felt a surge of relief. They were pulling away from the Orc charge now, and the dust was beginning to shroud them. Just a few more minutes, and they'd be hitting the base of Ridge 1, under the cover of Imperial lines. The moment of reprieve didn't last long. The panicked voice of the Chimera's driver blurted over the intercom.
"Contact right! Contact right!"
Hanlon just had time to register the words before she heard a loud clang from the right-hand side of the hull.
"They're right outside!"
Vaughn screamed, still firing his hull lasgun.
"Thrown! Where did they come from?"
Nobody answered. The Chimera pitched suddenly to the left, hard. Hanlon lost her grip on the overhead rail and grunted as she slammed into the side of the hold. At the same moment,
A detonation slammed through the transport, like a hammer striking an anvil, shuddering the whole vehicle and making the Numerian's ears ring. Hanlon reached for the troop bench, trying to right herself, dazed and sluggish. She touched her brow and realized she was bleeding from a gash above her left eye. Smoke was filling the hold, stinking and black.
"We're not moving," Markle said, groggily. "Why have we stopped?"
Only then did Hanlon, her head spinning, realize that they'd come to a standstill. Wilk found his feet first. He banged the exit room, coughing as more smoke poured into the hold. The rear ramp dropped, thudding down into ash churned by the Chimera's tracks. Hanlon saw immediately that those tracks were no more. The blast had scattered broken links from the right-hand runner across the dusty earth.
"Out!"
she managed to bark, scrambling to her feet and down the fallen ramp. Initially, she could see nothing amidst the churning ash. Her world had been reduced to the filmy lenses of her goggles and the rattle and scrape of her respirator mask. She spun back towards the Chimera and saw the scorch marks all along its right side. Something had clamped onto its flank and detonated, leaving the vehicle useless and immobile. That wasn't Hanlon's most immediate concern, though. There were greenskins attacking the Chimera's crew compartment. Even at a glance, Hanlon could see they weren't like regular orcs. They moved, hunched, low to the ground, and were clad in what looked like the ragged, dusty approximation of her team's recon capes and spotting goggles. One had used what looked like a las cutter combined with a welder to sear a hole in the flank of the Chimera's forward section, and now others were dragging the hapless crew out into the ash. Battle Ruth's commander was screaming horrifically as one of the grunting aliens crudely butchered him with a huge cleaver, and two others had grasped the driver and were physically tearing him limb from limb. Hanlon stared in horror as she saw flesh and blood-sodden fatigues rip, exposing still-pulsing organs and white bone. As she stood, rooted to the spot, one of the greenskins turned to her, peering through its heavy scrap goggles. It pointed a claw at her and bellowed.
"Go!" Hanlon shouted. "Go! Go! Go!"
The recon team ran, past the opposite side of the Chimera. The orcs came bounding after them, letting out bestial cries and firing their slug weapons indiscriminately. One round thumped into the ash just ahead of Hanlon, and another plucked at her camo cape as she ran. A part of her, drilled by the memory of her commissar's furious orders, wanted to turn back and open fire. She thrust the suicidal thought aside. Battle Wrath's crew were dead, and the rest of the greenskin attack was bearing down on them. She wasn't even sure exactly which way she was running anymore.
"We're dead," Vaughn was panting over the link. "We're dead." "Keep going," Hanlon snarled, "or I'll kill you myself."
Another shell screamed down and detonated nearby, showering them with dust and dirt. Hanlon forcing herself to focus through it all, Kit bouncing as she ran, breath rasping through her rebreather mask. If she got just one member of her team out, she decided, her own death would be worthwhile. Hoping for anything more now seemed like asking for a miracle. Castor. Castor paced the redoubt line. The firing step beside him was manned by ranks of guardsmen, las rifles laid out across the sandbag parapet, file after file rendered faceless and identical by the pall of ash kicked up by the artillery. The chaplain could sense the heady mixture of emotions that so affected mortal men about to enter a combat situation. The stiff, quivering postures that betrayed anticipation, terror, and a nervous, infectious excitement. For his own part, Castor felt no such emotions. His thoughts ran two parallel paths. One was cold, firm, a subconscious focused on an overly familiar pre-battle cant. His bolter was blessed and loaded. Salve Imperata had been anointed. His armor's servos and power plant were functioning at optimum levels with a full integrity readout, and the displays running across his auto-sensors, the burst map, vox transcriptions, chronometer, ammunition counter, vitae signs, and squad location and status markers were all activated. The other path, his more conscious train of thought, was fiery and filled with the bitter taste of revenge. He could feel the combat stims and adrenaline pumping through his limbs, making them ache with readiness. The thudding of his twin heartbeats, battering at the back of his breastplate, was a potent reminder of both vitality and mortality. While even one continued to beat, he would fight on in the name of the chapter and the Emperor. Memories from the day before, of Demeter's sacrifice and the ignominy of withdrawal, made the chaplain's hold on his weapons tighten. They had known the Xenos would come again. Today would be the reckoning every ultramarine here prayed for. His armor servos grated with the strength of his grip, and it was all he could do to stop himself from unleashing a bellow of battle lust. Control. He was an ultramarine, a loyal and humble servant of his chapter and the Imperium. He would not sully his rank or his brotherhood with the savagery and mindlessness so often exhibited by lesser warriors. Though he had been forged for war, it would not consume him. He would channel it instead.
"Look to your weapons, soldiers of the God Emperor," he called out, his powerful voice booming through the redoubts and sandbag embankments. "Recite the litanies of loading, readiness, and accuracy. Listen for your officers and sergeants, and if they are lost, trust in your bayonets and the guidance of the Emperor."
The words came easily. He sensed the soldiers he passed standing a little taller and firmer as they faced out towards the foot of the ridge. A few even dared snatch a glance back at the skull-helmed giant in the black battleplate. Castor did not rebuke them. His armor and vestments were in themselves a sacred symbol of the Emperor's vengeful judgment, and to witness them on the brink of combat was a blessing that those who fought in his name were worthy of. He had no right to deny them.
"Yesterday we were dishonored," he continued as he walked. "Yesterday we were defeated, but today our absolution is at hand. Now is the time for vengeance. Now is the time to cover our shame with Xenos blood, to crush it beneath the weight of alien corpses. We will make yesterday a footnote in the annals of Imperial history. Today, we break the Greenskins, here, on this ridge. Today is the victory future generations will speak of."
He passed in front of an artillery section, the Earthshakers embedded just to the rear of the secondary redoubts. The whole world seemed to shudder every time they fired, causing dust to leap from the sandbags all around. Castor didn't delete the percussive thunder with his Lyman's ear, instead using it to modulate his helm's vox speakers. Not even battling directly beneath the thunder of the artillery would drown out the words of one of the Emperor's chaplains.
"Soldiers of the Imperial Guard! Do not take a backward step. With your lasguns you will slay the alien, but with your faith and your courage you will reconquer this entire world. The ultramarines will be there with you when you do. Stand and fight with us for the glory of the Emperor and the Imperium, for the honor of your regiments, and for the future of Ikara."
On he went as he walked the line, slowly and firmly, voice clear over the crash of the big guns. The litany only ceased when he came to a section of redoubt manned by the intercessors of Squad Faustus. The sergeant acknowledged him with a Primaris salute, two gauntlets across his chest. His battle brothers stood on the redoubt's floor, each with one foot up on the firing step, steadying them, their height allowing them to see over it without needing to leave the ground.
"We didn't have time to heighten it after we took it over," Faustus said, indicating the sandbag parapet.
"It will be enough," Castor said. "I'm more concerned about the rest of the line. Our spacing is short."
Faustus said nothing, glancing along to the next ultramarine's position. It was held by Domitian's hellblasters, and there was less than 100 yards of redoubt between it and Faustus. Castor had no doubt the Zoishen infantry in between them would hold, but he was less sure about the long reaches of the ridge, where there were no Primaris to bolster the Astra Militarum soldiers. Tyrannus's decision to concentrate the Demi-Company's remains at the heart of the Imperial defences would create an unassailable bulwark,
but supporting the flanks would be almost impossible.
"Reinforcements are inbound from Croton," Faustus said. "If we can maintain the integrity of the line center through the night..."
He trailed off. Custer slapped a gauntlet against his pauldron and nodded.
"Not a backward step, my brother. I will see you again soon enough, I am sure."
The chaplain carried on down the line, while around him, the first spotters dotted along the redoubts identified contacts out in the ash haze. Polixis.
"Great Father of the Endless Skies, if I should this day die, see me to your holy side, that I may bring tomorrow pride."
Polixis stood with Squad Valorius on the western extreme of the section of ridge held by the Ultramarines, and listened to the traditional death poems being murmured by the Tamaran Brigade holding their flanks. Behind them was a regiment of Voitikans stationed in reserve, and then a battery of Kelistan Manticores that were sending shrieking hails of rockets overhead into the haze, detonating among unseen targets below.
"Contacts!"
Brother Gallus said over the vox. The Ultramarines' autosensors had detected motion amidst the ash shroud, stripping it back and identifying movement patterns long before the humans on either side were capable of spotting anything.
"Good eyes, Gallus. Stand by," Sergeant Valorius replied.
Polixis moved to Gallus's side, looking out at the open expanse of grey tundra stretching away from the foot of the ridge. There was something out there, but his own visor couldn't get a fix. The slowly gathering Akaran night was making visibility even worse. He glanced at Gallus. The intercessor had taken a heavy orc slug round through the shoulder in Shabbat, just before the final push for the Excelsior Arch. Polixis had removed it, and the Primaris showed no signs of impairment a day on. Only his pauldron indicated that he'd been wounded. There had been no time to patch the jagged silver rent punched in the curving blue ceramite. The throaty voice of a Tamaran tribe officer crackled over the vox, indicating that they too had finally spotted something.
"Hold your fire," Valorius urged them. "Follow my directives, guardsmen, and the day will be ours."
The primal, swelling roar of the approaching greenskin horde was now audible over the thunder of the ceaseless artillery barrage, fueling the anticipation of the Ultramarines. Castor had already passed by on his way along the line, exchanging a few words with Valorius and several other intercessors. He had said nothing to Polixis, though they had exchanged a warrior's handshake, hand to Vambrace. After Castor's sermon earlier that day, there was nothing more to be said between them. Polixis's enhanced hearing could still hear his brother's distant words, carrying faith and fury over the storm of war that was gathering along the ridgeline.
"Contacts identified," Gallus said. "Astra Militarum."
"Confirm," Valorius said.
Polixis turned his gaze back out towards the tundra, searching for what Gallus had already seen. After a few seconds, it became apparent. Figures were visible running through the ash, five in total, clad in the combat capes and light flak plate of the Numerians.
"A picket team?"
Brother Cassian's inquired. All of the other reconnaissance units watching the front had already withdrawn up the ridge to their parent units. For some reason, this one had been left behind.
"Their transport must have been hit," Valorius surmised.
The running guardsmen hadn't got far before more shapes materialized from out of the darkening pall behind them. These were hunched, brutish. They emerged first in dozens, then hundreds. As Polixis watched, yet more joined them, charging out of the drifting ash bank barely 100 yards behind the fleeing humans.
"Enemy contacts!"
the voice of the Tamaran commander clicked over the link.
"Approaching maximum range! Make ready!"
"Hold your fire," Valorius interjected. "You'll hit those men."
He switched to addressing Lieutenant Tyrannus on the command channel, speaking with rapid, clipped efficiency.
"Forward units still in the open in Sector 13, approximately 300 yards from the base of the ridgeline. I'm taking a detachment to bring them in, pending your orders."
Waiting only for confirmation that the message had been transmitted, Valorius blink-selected two of his intercessors,
brothers Vito and Albanius, over the visor display. Without those pickets, we wouldn't have known about this attack until it was too late. We shall not abandon them. On me.
The three Primaris pulled themselves up over the parapet and dropped down on the other side. Polixus went with them. Valorius turned, a warning hand going up to the apothecary's breastplate.
Do not risk yourself, brother. This needs to be done quickly. As I recall, I beat your most recent time in the training runs, Sergeant. Some of those men are likely injured, and even if they are not, what will you do if you or a member of your squad falls while recovering them? I am coming with you.
There was no time for debate. Valorius chambered a round in his auto-bolt rifle and set off down the slope, voxing that Brother Gallus had command until he returned. Polixus, Vito, and Albanius followed, fanning out either side as they went. Their armor struggled in the yielding ash, the stabilizers working hard to keep them upright as they moved as swiftly as possible downhill. Polixus unclamped his absolver pistol as he went. Beneath him, the full weight of the greenskin assault was becoming apparent, spreading left and right as far as the ash cloud permitted him to see. All along the rest of the line, heavy weapons teams and battle tanks embedded into the ridge opened fire. Heavy bolters and autocannons began battering out streams of tracer-guided hard rounds into the darkening gloom, while missiles, mortar shells, and battle cannon rounds tore gaps in the onrushing tide in sudden bursts of dust, steel, and ripped green bodies. The section directly ahead and around Squad Valorius, however, remained eerily silent. It felt as though they were descending into the pit of a cauldron, or some sheltered valley removed from the thunder and flashes of the storm that raged amidst the peaks all around. Polixus heard Valorius give the order to open fire, and the trio of intercessors either side of the apothecary began to shoot on the move, their bolt rifles bang-clicking with a steady stream of controlled bursts. The guardsmen ahead had spotted them and redoubled their efforts, stumbling through the ash as bolt shells whipped past with lethal precision. The greenskins closest behind tumbled down in the dust, skulls and chests pulverized by the detonating rounds. There was some return fire, but even stationary orcs were horrific marksmen. On the move, their shots sprayed the air and twitched bursts of ash from the ground, but nothing came close. The Primaris reached the foot of the ridge, the space between them and the recon team closing rapidly. Then the infantry lining the redoubts on the ridge above opened fire, and the night dissolved in an eye-aching blaze of death. Hanlon knew Wilk was struggling. The Vox operator, weighed down by his kit, had begun falling behind as they ran.
"Give him cover!"
Hanlon shouted, forcing herself to slow her pace. She'd barely uttered the words when a crack from the ash swirling about them was followed by the sight of half of Wilk's skull bursting open in a mist of brain and bone.
"Thrown, damn it!"
Hanlon panted, waving for the rest of the squad to keep going. They carried on, lost in the dust, deafened and disorientated as they stumbled and gasped for breath in their rubbery respirator masks. The pounding of her heart had grown painful in Hanlon's chest, and her muscles burned with unrelenting strain. A little part of her just wanted to collapse, to lie down and let the oncoming beasts trample her. The memory of the Chimera crew's gory fate kept her going. If not for herself, she had to carry on for the rest of the team. She'd already lost Wilk. She wouldn't let the others down. Shells screamed from out of the darkness, each detonation shaking the earth underfoot and throwing up more ash to shroud their surroundings. One struck so close that it threw them all to the ground, and Hanlon heard the whicker of shrapnel as it whipped past. A piece of undistinguishable flesh, the blasted remains of one of their pursuers, impacted into the dust beside her as she stumbled back to her feet. They were right behind them. Then the ash cleared, like a sign from the God Emperor himself, and they were out, past the worst of the barrage's dust cloud. Ridge 1 reared up before them, bristling with defensive works and weapon emplacements, and lit by spotter lights. From somewhere deep inside, Hanlon felt fresh vitality power her limbs, throwing her towards that yearned-for slope and the safety of sandbags and brothers-in-arms. As she ran, She could see heavy weapons on the ridge either side opening fire on the wave of orcs pouring from the dust, but the positions directly above remained silent. She began to panic, thinking that they'd been abandoned and the recon team would reach the redoubts seconds before the orcs punched through an empty gap in the Imperial line. Then she spotted movement, and her mind surged with fresh hope. Four figures had clambered over the parapets of one of the redoubts. Four giants, clad in heavy armor. Even as she saw them, her mind refused to believe what it was witnessing. Four members of the Adeptus Astartes, Ultramarines, the God Empress Praetorians. They were real, after all. The Space Marines began to move down the slope as the Numerians neared its base, and Handlin realized that they were coming to give them close-range covering fire. She threw herself on, vaguely aware of the rest of her squad doing likewise around her. They couldn't falter now. They just couldn't. Then, less than 100 paces from the foot of the ridgeline, with the Ultramarines covering fire whipping past, the rest of the Imperial forces defending Ridge 1 joined the battle. There was a spectacular crack, like the shattering of worlds, as the Lasgun-armed infantry all along the line unleashed their first volley. The new night was lit up by thousands of darts of brilliance, red, green, blue, as the regiments holding Ridge 1 poured small arms fire into the rising tide. Xenos went down, their bodies riddled with dozens of cauterized las wounds, flesh blown to atoms by higher megathuel shots. Those behind trampled their erstwhile kin as they closed on the foot of the ridge. The guard above Hanlon fired as well, and the sudden blaze of light momentarily blinded her. She tripped and fell, no breath to cry out as she thumped into the ash and heard the familiar whip-crack of lasbolts, thousands of them searing overhead. She scrabbled in the grey dust, panting, spots flaring before her eyes as her sight slowly returned. For long seconds, she didn't know where she was or what she was doing. She realized something was standing over her, its broad shoulders blocking the blizzard of illumination that had descended on the space between the ridgeline and the edge of the orc attack. At first, Hanlon thought it was a greenskin. She gasped air into her lungs, scrabbling among the soft, dry ash for her rifle. A hand stopped her. It gripped her beneath one arm, and seemingly without effort, hauled her up onto her feet. She found herself staring into burning red eyes and an unyielding white helmet visor, caked with dust.
"You can run,"
scraped a voice, seemingly forged from iron. Hanlon only managed to nod. Her heart was racing, and she could barely breathe. It seemed impossible that she could be standing so close to something so vast and so implacable, and yet still be permitted to live. The mere hum of its active battle plate was making her teeth ache.
"Then go."
The huge figure thrust her towards the ridgeline. She stumbled, but carried on, half bent over, no longer even aware of whether or not the rest of the team was still with her. All that mattered was the slope, the damnable, exhausting, seemingly endless slope, and reaching the top of it before the lasbolts flying overhead or the monsters charging from behind reached her. Polixis.
"Maintain covering fire," Valorius ordered.
The three intercessors stood like a blue bulwark amidst the rising green tide, autobolt rifles rattling as they cut down the waves that threatened to crash over them. The greenskins were close enough for Polixis to have opened fire too, his power armor compensating for the recoil of the Absolver bolt pistol as he snapped shots off into the seemingly endless morass of savagery stampeding towards him. From the glance that he was able to snatch left and right, it looked to Polixis as though the orc charge was at its furthest extent directly ahead. The fact that the Astra Militarum holding the ridge above had been forced to hold fire for so long had allowed the greenskins to gain more ground than anywhere else along the line. They'd followed hard on the heels of the retreating Imperials, without the threat of the barrage being laid down on either side. Valorius himself hadn't authorized the Tamarans to open fire. Clearly, one of their commanders had panicked. So far, however, their shots had all whipped over and past the Ultramarines, and the small band of battered, exhausted Numerians now slogging up the slope. None had been carrying obvious wounds, and Polixis had sent them on while the Primaris gave them covering fire.
They had only a few seconds more before they too would have to turn or risk being overrun. Thunder rolled across the ridgeline, separate from the continuous hammering of the artillery and the heavy weapons emplacements. A ripple of detonations burst close to the base of the slope, just north of where Polixis stood. He caught a darting light streak overhead, followed by another. More explosions flared amongst orc hordes, snapshots of light silhouetting disintegrating bodies and wrecked equipment. The Imperial Navy's air support had arrived from Croton, scrambled the moment the pickets had reported massed movement in the evening shadows.
"Grenades!" Valorius snapped. "Then fall back on the apothecary!"
The intercessors sent a trio of fragmentation grenades arcing into the horde, while Polixis began to move backwards up the slope, reloading as he went. Blasts ripped open the nearest greenskins, and the Ultramarines used the few seconds' respite to move back after the exhausted Numerians. Valorius was last to begin moving, unloading clip after clip from his weapon's drum magazine as he went. An orc with a primed stick grenade in one fist went down just before he could lob the explosive, the blast adding to the decimation of those around it. Still the orcs came. They hit the bottom of the slope and rushed up it without pause, iron-shod boots digging into the soft earth. Still the Imperial Guard poured in their lasfire, mowing down rank after rank with a latticework of blazing energy bolts. Some of the orcs charged head-first into the coils of razor wire that had been hastily dragged out before the sandbag redoubts. Those that hit it were snared and dragged into the vicious wires, and those behind simply trampled over them, even as their kindred roared and writhed, tough bodies slowly shredded, dark blood drenching the ash. The attack bore no hallmarks of careful consideration or tactical nuance. It was an animalistic stampede, and it seemed as if nothing was going to be able to stop it. Valorius paused a little over halfway up the slope, and now stood his ground, still firing, silhouetted against the charging horde by the flare of his bolt rifle. Teeth clenched, Polixis doubled back and snatched his pauldron, dragging him half around.
"No more sacrifices, Sergeant! Not while I'm here! Get back!"
Valorius turned back to the Xenos and started to shoot once more, but he also began to move again, backwards, up the last 100 yards, firing his assault weapon from the hip with a degree of accuracy far beyond unaugmented humans. The air was heavy with return fire, but Polixis paid it no heed. Amidst the storm of las and hard rounds, a warrior could do little more than put his faith in his battle plate and the hand of the Emperor. The Numerians were at the redoubts, scrambling up over the parapets and dropping onto the firing steps beyond. The thunder of the rest of Squad Valorius's bolt rifles had joined the fire of the Tamarans around them, and the edge of the orc assault seemed to come apart before Polixis's eyes as he finally reached the safety of the Imperial lines. He accepted the offered gauntlet of Brother Gallus, servos whirring as he pulled himself up and over the defensive works and down onto the other side. As Valorius, Vito, and Albanius joined him back in the redoubt, he became aware of the crack of auto-rifles amidst the familiar thunder of the intercessors' bolter fire. He realized that the recon team they'd just rescued had taken up positions on the firing step alongside the hulking Primaris, and almost without pause were now adding their fire to the fusillade being poured into the onrushing greenskins. Despite coming within feet of being torn apart, the soldiers hadn't hesitated to continue to do their duty. Polixis stood alongside one and began firing his pistol, a sudden, unexpected surge of pride rising within him. It was not just for his brothers or the chapter that he fought, but also for all mankind. As long as a human fought on Ridge One, he would not abandon it. Castor. Castor watched in silence as the orcs charged up the slope towards him. There were thousands of them, brute savages clad in rough leathers, pelts and scrap metal, wielding cleavers and axes and slug guns that they fired indiscriminately at the redoubts or skywards into the ash clouds. Some scrambled up the shifting slope on all fours, like mindless animals, while the bigger ones actively pushed and shoved their smaller kin into the dirt so they could be at the forefront of the assault. Castor despised them. He had done so since he had first heard of them, in the stories told in the haylofts or around the shepherd campfires of Ajax's agri-collectives. They were mankind's ancient enemy, the most common antagonists in the tales of the mighty ultramarines that colored the native folklore of his homeworld. That initial hatred had only grown after his induction, and their full savage nature had been laid bare before him. They were the bane, not just of humanity, but of civilization itself. They sought only endless war, tearing down all that was ordered and anything that was peaceful, from one end of the galaxy to the other. Like an infestation, they would spring up, and only righteous flame could truly eradicate their barbarism. Everywhere mankind went, the greenskins fought them there. There were few things Castor yearned for more than the annihilation of their alien race. For that reason, the more he saw pouring from the dust and darkness below, the more he silently rejoiced. More to slaughter, more to eradicate. He would see their bodies butchered and their spores burned. No trace of their existence would be left on Ikara by the time he was finished. His twin hearts leapt in his breast when the Imperial line opened fire, and his optics saw the leading edge of the horde savaged in righteous detail. He watched as Lasbolts in their thousands ripped, punched, and burned into green flesh, liquefying organs, searing away brain matter, and sending bodies tumbling and rolling through the ash. Nearby, Squad Domitian's hellblasters were adding even more glory to the blaze that was lighting up the night, the eye-achingly brilliant bolts of their plasma weapons turning whole mobs of alien warriors to just more blackened ash in a few seconds of concentrated firepower. The heavy weapons of the Imperial Guard did even more egregious slaughter. Heavy bolters and autocannons mowed down the oncoming ranks, while missiles and mortar shells and the greater munitions of battle tanks and artillery rent great gaps in the alien masses. It was butchery, unadulterated and raw, and it made Castor's heart soar and his voice break out in praise of the Emperor. Below, the green tide faltered, and for the first time since they had come storming from Shebat's ruins, the aliens' offensive stalled.
"See how they falter beneath our righteous fury," Castor intoned, beginning to pace the line once more, voice thundering over the fury of the barrage. "Load and fire, soldiers of the Emperor! Load and fire! They will not stand!"
He forced himself to check his own rising passion long enough to review the Fulminata's tactical display. All squads were holding their positions, ammunition was being expended at a manageable rate, and the kill counters were soaring. He frowned when he saw the automatic log showing that Polixis had accompanied three members of Squad Valorius down the slope moments before to cover a retreating picket unit, but it seemed their gamble had worked, for they were now shown as safely back within the defences of Section 13. Castor growled. He would have to have words with his brother again following the night's engagement. The chapter could not risk losing him. He could not risk losing him.
"Pick your targets, soldiers," he said,
as he carried on, through a section held by a battalion of Faeburn vanquishers.
"Aim for their legs. Bring them down, and they will be crushed by those behind. Do not waste a single shot."
Plastus' squad, the last section of the Fulminata to the north, were holding the bulwark just past the Faeburns. Tyrannus was with them. The lieutenant had unclamped his power sword and now stood with it, point down, gauntlets resting on its hilt, as he analyzed the damage being done to the orc assault.
"They will break soon,"
Castor said as he joined him.
"They are bringing up armor,"
Tyrannus responded. Greenskin scrap wagons and looted battle tanks were beginning to emerge from the ash cloud to the rear of the orc lines, and a few had even started lobbing shells into the ridge's forward slope. They were being destroyed almost as swiftly as they emerged, though, an easy target for the Laz Cannon teams and embedded Lehman Russ squadrons lining the area just below the crest.
15 more minutes,
Tyrannus estimated.
"I pray they hold for longer," Castor replied. "By the Emperor's will, I hope every Xenos in Shebat throws itself at us, here and now." "I should not have doubted the Astra Militarum,"
Tyrannus said.
"They are standing their ground." "Thanks to your directives," Castor said. "And your sermons, Brother Chaplain."
This time, Castor didn't respond. An explosion tore through the redoubt he had just passed through. He felt the blast wave hammer into his back, followed by the battering impact of debris and shrapnel. He turned as smoke and ash shrouded Clastis and the other ultramarines in the bulwark. The position occupied by the Faeburn vanquishers was no more. The sandbags and flakboards had been shattered, and the scorched, churned-up earth was littered with the remains of eviscerated guardsmen. Wounded and dazed soldiers were stumbling through what had formerly been a disciplined firing sector. In an instant, the barrage that had been tearing into the orc assault from that part of the line was gone. The greenskins below roared and renewed their charge, pounding up the slope towards the open wreckage left in the detonation's wake. Castor began to run at the breach, instinct taking over. But even as he did so, an even more immediate threat registered with his Genhance senses. Over the sounds of the oncoming greenskins and the renewed thunder of Squad Clastus's bolt rifles, he could hear a noise as dire as it was familiar. The shriek of more incoming munitions and the rattle of crude engines in the night sky above.